Adam Bly is our guest this evening. He's a modern religious demonologist who trains priests in exorcism at the national level. He also works with the Roman Catholic Church in exorcism and religious demonology, as well as an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists. He has a master's in adult clinical psychology and has worked in forensic and community clinical settings. This evening, we spent the first hour discussing angels. What are angels? How do they interfere or intercede in our lives? If you missed the first part of the show, it's a very easy remedy. You can go right to coasttocoastam.com. Become an insider. You'll never miss another minute of the best in overnight talk radio. For about 15 cents a day, it gives you access to over 5 years of past shows. You'll also get opportunity to read the news segments that are posted up there. You get an opportunity to do live chats with George Norrie and some of the guests that you hear right on the show. Again, it's all right on the site for you. Very easy, very convenient. Go check out coasttocoastam.com. And you'll find out for yourself why we are the best in overnight talk radio. Adam Bly, our guest this evening, angels and demons. We're taking your call this hour. We want to hear your stories. Have you ever had an encounter with an angel in the angelic realm? Do you believe that an angel has interceded on your behalf? This is your time to shine. Give us a call and tell us your stories. If you have questions, thoughts, insights, this is the time to share them. Next hour, demons. We'll be looking at oppression, exorcism, possessions, and more. We're doing that all tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Have you checked out the Coast to Coast AM website? Lex has posted some very interesting stories on there right now. Some of the website highlights include auroras from the solar storm, some beautiful photographs from around the world and from space of the aurora borealis. Also in the news, what was the strange streak of light seen in the Bay Area sky and engineering mosquitoes to spread health? You can check that all out at coasttocoastam.com. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader, my guest, Adam Bly. And Adam, we're going to open up phone lines now. Here's some encounters, some questions. Are you ready?
Sure thing.
Let's go to wild card line one, Bob in California. Welcome to Coast. What did you want to talk about?
Thanks for taking my call, Dave and Adam. Nice to talk to you. I had a pretty incredible experience about 18 years ago when I started dating this Italian woman who had recently lost her father. Very devout, devout Catholic family, and she was grieving very heavily, you know, about his death. And after a few dates, she confided to me that she was actually seeing him in her apartment. And so, you know, I'm trying to, like, yeah, okay, sure. But anyway, she went on to explain that he was not alone. He was in the company of angels. And she said all different types, from winged angels to cherubs who would be apparently floating in the room. And I didn't really know what to make of it, you know. And anyway, so she'd start coming over to my house at night, and you know, she also had an 18-month-old son at the time, and she would start wincing occasionally. I'm like, what are you doing? And she said, well, when the her father actually started appearing in my apartment, too, which was, you know, another story, but she said when he'd show up and the angel would show up, there'd be a brilliant blue flash in the room, and I didn't see it at the time. And anyway, so I kind of went along with it, not really quite sure what to make out of it. And anyway, her son, her 18-month-old son, he would occasionally point up at the ceiling. And she's like, well, yeah, he's looking at that, you know, angel that's up there. And anyway, to make a very long story short, after another week went by, one night we were watching TV in my house, and a extremely bright blue flash appeared right next to the TV. And that was the first time I saw anything. And I was like, oh, my God, she's actually, you know, telling me the truth. I don't know if that's something that happens if they appear in a room or not, but I just want to get your thoughts on that.
How long had it been since he had died?
It was probably maybe a week or so.
Okay. And the reason I ask that, it kind of depends on how you interpret things scripturally, you know, whether you believe people go to their judgment instantly or whether there's some type of process. And the reason I asked about the time is in the Orthodox Church, particularly the Greek Orthodox Church, which is basically the, you know, very long ago, they believe that there is a journey of the soul after we die that takes 40 days before you finish the various, there's a number of things that they do. So, you know, I can't say, of course, what was going on there or whether he was there.
Well, I tried to investigate and talk to some people I know who were, you know, supposed psychic in nature. And anyway, they told her and myself that because she was grieving so heavily that, you know, she had to let him go, that he was staying there because of her, and she had to move on. And anyway, that's basically why she kept seeing him. And we broke up after a while. I still talked to her occasionally, and eventually he stopped appearing to her. Mm-hmm. But that was, you know, the job of the whole thing.
Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate you calling and being a part of the show. Adam, you've been a part of a lot of investigations and claims of the supernatural and paranormal, both in the ghost realm and in the demonic realm. I'm curious what you know of the psychology and physiology of a human. If somebody is in deep grieving, we know that a lot of poltergeist cases center around usually one person referred to as the poltergeist agent. Sometimes it seems not so much a ghostly interference, but more of a psychokinetic type of interference. Do you believe that in periods of heavy grieving and mental strain that can cause energy bursts, these blue flashes, lights, things like this that may be witnessed by multiple people?
Well, I've never seen or heard of evidence that the brain can do that on its own, no. I know the story about the poltergeist theory, but when we've dealt with cases of situations like that, they have always resolved from doing the house blessings or the house exorcisms. So personally, I've never seen evidence to support the theory that it's coming from the physical brain. Now, when we're grieving really heavily, I think two things can happen. You know, the mind is kind of, imagine a board set up on two cinder blocks, like a little bench there. And the mind is kind of like that. It's a board there. And then if we put strain on it, if we sit on that bench and we put stress on that board, the mind, any little cracks that are in it are going to start to show when it bends a little. And as you put a lot more weight on it, it'll bend further and the cracks will show even more. And that's what happens in life when we get under a lot of stress. Any kind of flaws within the system in terms of our mind and how we grew up or our biology, they're going to start to show when we're under strain and under stress. And if you put too much weight on the board and it breaks, that's what's called a psychotic break. So basically, when you're grieving really heavily, you can have some strange experiences if you have some predisposition to that and your mind is under that strain. You might be having, you know, nightmares and waking up and seeing things in the middle of the night, or thinking you hear, you know, the voice of your loved one calling in the house or something. And it could be that, you know, there's a predisposition in your mind from the psych kind of perspective.
We're going to continue taking your calls this evening. This one's tough for me to take, Adam. I'm not going to lie. We're going to go to wildcard line 2, Pat in Massachusetts. I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan, and if you don't believe in angels today, definitely Massachusetts had some angels working on their side. Pat, welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Adam. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
I actually just had a question for Adam. He was mentioning earlier that he didn't really believe that relatives come to see you and communicate with you, and I know the last caller kind of talked about that a little bit. But and I've had quite a bit of experiences, whether it's been in dreams or through astral projection, and I've communicated with relatives that have passed on. So I just wanted to kind of ask him why he doesn't believe. I know he believes that they go on to the next world, heaven, or whatever you want to call it. But I believe that they do go on, but that they still can come back and intervene like angels or communicate with you. And I just wanted to kind of hear him talk about that a little bit more, because the experiences I've had were very real. I've never seen these relatives physically like some other people might describe, but it's more of a thing where it's in your mind and they send images and communicate to me that way. So I just wanted to kind of have them touch base on that a little bit more.
Sure. And one of the things, you know, and I'm not trying to dismiss this, but one thing I picked up on from what you said is that these experiences are happening usually around the sleep state, so either in dreams or astral projecting. And when people say astral projecting, they mean, usually they mean that if they're going into some meditative state and they believe that their soul is then able to leave their body. But it's essentially what we would call probably a sleep state also, in the sense that you're going into a trance, you're relaxing deeply, you're possibly falling asleep and then having this dream. So in the whole paranormal realm, and Dave, I know you know this over the years too, one of the most common things people say is, I woke up and saw such and such, you know, and then a few seconds later it was gone. Well, when we're asleep or when we're going into sleep or coming out of sleep, if we're having experiences only in those states, we want to be very cautious because the mind is very tricky at that time. Dreams can be incredibly vivid and seem very real, and they can be wish fulfillment. You know, I'm missing so-and-so, and so I dream about them, and it seems very real. And also, as I'm going into sleep or coming out, I can be dreaming a little bit, but also awake a little bit, and that's what we call hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations. And so I can be having experiences there, or dreaming that I'm leaving my body and going to see people, etc. So basically, you know, I don't want to tell you what to believe. In my experience and my understanding of the way things work, human spirits are not going to come to us and start interacting with us because it's basically against the rules. That's just my opinion based on scripture and experience. It's against the rules. And why is that? Because we'd be putting that spirit before trusting God. We'd basically be saying, instead of trusting God and that God's going to take care of my loved one and take care of me, I'm going to get information from this other spirit other than God and trust it to provide either comfort or knowledge to me. And that's basically forbidden, probably again because of the first commandment, but also just from direct experience, I've seen this play out. So, you know, I'm not trying to be negative with people, but basically be very cautious about sleep states and things close to sleep states. And that was the reason that I don't think it's basically within the rules for them.
People, myself included, feel the inclination to call out to our loved ones after they pass away, looking for signs. And I know that, you know, according to the Bible, necromancing and trying to communicate with the dead is not something that is believed that should be done, or, you know, basically we're told not to do this type of thing. As a psychologist and looking at that, there's a deep-rooted need for completion, for people to have an opportunity to have closure with our loved ones. How do we get around the psychology and need and want and desire to continue a relationship with somebody that we love so much in life and accept their death and get over the fear of death and the fear of loss?
Well, I mean, just for myself, Dave, just to share something, you know, because I've had an experience with this. My father passed on, you know, a few weeks back now, and it was early for him. It was a blood clot issue, so it was a little bit sudden, but I was able to be with him, talk with him. He could still signal a little bit. We were able to bring as much closure and forgiveness from any people from his life that he may have still felt burdened or guilt about. And then he had as good of a death as I think, you know, I could try to arrange and do for him. And then once he passed on, what gives me comfort, and I think what a lot of religions provide for people, is we're able to pray for them, you know, as they're dying, and provide some type of religious intervention for them. And within Catholicism, at least, we believe in purgatory. So if we're not perfect, which I know you're perfect, Dave, but I'm not. And, you know, so we have some baggage and some issues still to work through, and that's what we believe purgatory is, but we get through that. So we kind of pray for the dead for a while after they pass on, and that helps us with the grieving process because we have some some joy and hope for them that they're moving away from all the pain of life and the difficulties in their life and their passing, and we're able to kind of help them through the prayer, and that gives us a way to channel that. And so I think a lot of religions provide a kind of positive way to do that without holding on to them or holding on to their memory in the sense of, you know, need and sadness and loss, but trying to turn that into joy and kind of, you know, pushing and saying, okay, go, be happy, be with God, and I'll see you later. And so it's a way to kind of transform the experience.
All right, let's go to wildcard line 4, Lana in Idaho. Welcome to Coast AM. What did you want to talk about?
Well, my son, when he was 6, he was diagnosed with a terminal brain tumor, and he lived 11 months. And towards the end, he was in hospice at home. He would share with me the angels that were there. There were 2 that were always there. He called them by name. He told me it was John and Anna. And then 1 would come only if I would leave the house, and I would only really leave to go to the drugstore for his medicine. And it was very organic with him because we weren't, you know, we didn't go to church on a regular basis. It was nothing that, you know, that he had been told about or really taught. So I had asked him once when John and Anna were there, I asked him, you know, he let me know they were there. I said, where are they? And he pointed up towards the ceiling at the corner of the room. And I asked him, can they see me? And he said, I don't know. And he's looking up at them, not looking at me. And I told him I was going to wave. And I sat on the couch. I felt a little foolish, you know, and I waved at this corner. And he broke out in the biggest smile. And I said, what's going on? And he said, they're waving back. So I thought that was pretty neat. And
very pretty story.
Yes. And the other one that would come when I wasn't home, he told me her name was Crystal. She had blonde hair, and that she would ask him a lot of questions about what he liked. And he felt like she was preparing a place for him. And I thought that was very interesting as well. And then the thing that really got me, because he's 7, he doesn't know scripture. One morning he woke up so excited and he said, Mom, God and Jesus came to me and they were big as buildings. And so I was going to get him on the God thing because it says no man shall look upon the face of God. And I told him, that's great. I said, what did Jesus look like? And he was like, Mommy, no, it looked like Jesus. And I said, what did God look like? And he said, his face was blurry. I couldn't see his face. Mm-hmm. How would he know that? You know, it just was incredible that he had some really amazing times. There was one time he was laying in bed very still, and I went to touch him to make sure he was okay. And he opened his eyes, and very seriously, he said, Mom, don't touch me when Jesus is touching me. And I was respectful. I go, okay, there's something going on.
Oh, that's incredible, Lori. Thank you very much for calling in and sharing your story. Our guest is Adam Bly for the evening. We'll be talking more and taking more of your calls in this hour. If you've had angelic interactions and encounters or questions for our guest, this is the time to call. Next hour, we'll look at the demonic realm. That all takes place right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you enjoy the strange and the supernatural, then I encourage you to join me Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Central Time. I'm the host of Darkness Radio. You can check us out at darknessradio.com. We stream the show right from the iHeartRadio application, our home base in Minneapolis, St. Paul, on the Twin Cities News Talk station, but we run the stream right through darknessradio.com. We talk about ghosts, UFOs, psychic phenomena, monsters, myths, and legends, and you can be a part of it every night of the week. We also have a live chat, which I encourage you to go visit right now and be a part of tonight's show at darknessradio.com. Then the best part is keep your dial set right there. You can keep streaming because as soon as Darkness Radio signs off for the evening, George Norrie and Coast to Coast continues your journey into the strange and bizarre. This evening, we're talking angels and demons with our guest Adam Bly. We're taking your calls, and that continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, my guest, Adam Bly. Adam, our last guest, Lana, was talking to us from Idaho about her experiences and her son's experiences. Do you believe that that is something, especially when it comes to children, that the angels, God, Jesus, would make themselves easily accessible, even in life, for these people to have these experiences, to comfort them and bring them into a place of ease facing death like this?
Yeah, Dave, actually I do. I've heard so many stories over the years similar to this. And I've had one case I worked on where there was a child that had a number of issues that was having both positive and negative experiences. I've also worked with children that were a little bit older that had these experiences up to that point in their life. And it was clear that, you know, it was an intervention. And it is interesting, just like your caller said, the information these kids have and their sense of what's going on ends up being theologically accurate. And it's pretty amazing, you know, things that the child has no way of knowing. And so it's a very consistent picture. And I think it's part of the mercy of God that, you know, children in these situations are helped in this way. And I think it's actually pretty common.
That is compelling, isn't it? When children that might not be exposed to religion have these experiences all on their own and see and come back with the names God, Jesus, and can describe them this specific way. I mean, to me, that just seems really interesting that is going on. Or is it the fact that, like the Akashic Records, that there's this ethereal network of information that floats about that they're able to tap into to get that, you know, if people are throwing it out there and it's such a global consciousness? Again, that's kind of looking at it from the believers and the skeptical side of the runway, I guess. Let's go to Wildcard Line 3, Lori in New York. Thank you for hanging in with us. What's your topic you want to cover?
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Well, I wanted to get your opinion on something that happened to me where I seem to have an interactive communication with an angel. I'll tell you the way it happened and then what they told me. My mother feels it's very important that I understand the concept of salvation through Jesus the way she does. And one night when I was sleeping, it seemed as though she tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I brought a friend along to help explain something to you. And she even joked, hey, you know, your mom has friends in high places. And this friend was like an angel. And it was like kind of a happy-go-lucky Clarence-type angel from that famous movie. Mm-hmm. And the angel was like, oh, okay, well, let me, it seemed like he was like from the audiovisual squad. He said, like, okay, let me hear, get this going here. Just sit back and, you know, take this in. And there was a scroll. This is while I was sleeping. Suddenly a scroll took up my entire field of vision and went very, very fast. And I told the angel, or what seemed to be the angel, okay, I can take this in subconsciously, but it's going too fast. If you want me to understand it more consciously, you have to slow it down a little bit. So the scroll did slow down for a couple seconds, and then it sped up again. So I said, okay, I'll just, you know, lean back and, you know, take it all in. And then after the scroll was done, I felt like there was a big group of, like, ecstatically happy people who were waving. And I'd never heard this word before, but they were saying, agape, agape, okay, you know, like, see you later. And I just instinctively knew that this word agape was, like, the biggest hug you could give someone, like, unconditional love. Even though I'd never heard it before and even questioned, did I really hear the word agape? Was it something else? And what the message was that Jesus, while he was here, built four like sliding boards, or I don't want to call them wormholes, but that they were physical objects, but he built them with his mind, and that our souls actually have like an electric physicality to them, and that these four, you know, sliding boards or whatever you want to call them, existed as like escape hatches, or, you know, for us to get back to Jesus. And, you know, is all you had to do was think of them and, you know, believe that, you know, Jesus was going to pull you back to him, and that you could, you know, they were there for all of us to use anytime we wanted, or you know, anytime we needed, you know, that it was our physical, mental connection to Jesus. And I thought it was kind of an interesting way of, you know, I'm a bit more skeptical than my mother. She's, you know, accepts, you know, Jesus as salvation in a very faith-based, you know, way. And it was kind of, you know, a very interesting way for her to, you know, go out of her way to bring whomever or whatever to help me understand, you know, what she understands in a way that I could get it more. So I, you know, wanted to hear your what you have to say about that.
Thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate that, Lori. How do you address that, Adam?
Well, you know, again, I can't know for sure what went on there. I think, you know, when we look at the way God communicated when, you know, God was incarnate in the world, he used parables and analogies, right? And why did he do that? Well, because we can't really understand things at the level of God. We can't, you know, we're clueless at that level. So he would use analogies for spiritual things because it was a way for us to get the gist of the idea and the heart of it without being, you know, able to grasp, you know, whatever that level of understanding is. I don't even have words for it, right? So, you know, if she received some information about Christ and him building a bridge to God, which, you know, we do believe that it's through his action and incarnation and then his sacrifice that he builds a way to get to God. So, you know, that part seems to me, at least from a Judeo-Christian perspective or a Christian perspective, I guess, more properly, true. I don't know about the whole, you know, multiple portal kind of idea, but the heart of it that, you know, he built a way to get to God seems to be valid, and it could be that it was being described in a way that she would understand in terms that were relevant to her, and also the way she mentioned it was going quickly and it might have been hard to take it all in. Maybe her understanding of what she got wasn't complete through no fault of her own. And the other thing, it does sound like a one-way thing. So I didn't hear her mentioning, you know, asking questions or dialogue or this angel saying much more. The angel basically said, okay, I'm going to deliver this message. Here's a vision. And there are many visions in Scripture. And then I didn't hear anything more to the story. So presumably the angel then withdrew and finished its job. So I'm not saying that it was a valid experience. I can't know for sure. But there's not huge problems with it either.
Let's go to the international caller line. David in Canada, you're on the air. David, are you with us?
I can't tell you. It's a pleasure to be with you guys tonight.
Thank you very much.
I just got a quick story for you. When I was a really young child, to the point where I couldn't speak, but I do remember seeing, you know, some stuff I remember. And I remember that my family and I, we were in California visiting family, and my mom said that I was playing in the backyard and I got lost. And what I remember is I was lost in just a neighborhood street, a broad daylight, sunny, blue sky, and there was nobody else there. I was just walking on the left side of the sidewalk, and I'm walking, and at some point I was lost, and I just wanted to go home. And I looked to my left. Nothing made me look to the left. I don't know why. I looked to the left, and there was a young boy, no older than me, and he was wearing this sort of a white type of clothing. I don't want to say a robe. It was just white clothing, and it wasn't white like it's white like that. It wouldn't be seen anywhere on Earth. It was like really warm white. And anyways, this person, this child, I knew it wasn't a person. I realized that a couple years ago it couldn't have been a real person because a child of that age wouldn't have been acting that way. But I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I didn't say anything to him because I couldn't speak, but he just pointed to the left with his right arm. He went and pointed to the left while looking at me. So me being a child, I didn't know any better, and I just continued walking in the direction that he pointed me in. And after that, I don't remember what happened, but I remember, you know, I asked my mom about it, and she said that, yeah, you know, and he was there, and she saw him too. So that was one scenario that I believe was a good angel. Now, I don't know if it was a guardian angel, but also I had a sibling. My mom had a miscarriage. You're saying it wasn't, it couldn't have been a relative, but whoever it could have been, that was my good experience. I had one more negative experience not too long ago. I think it was about 4 years ago. Me and my friends were just hanging out watching TV, and then it got later on at nighttime, probably, I'd say, around 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was just driving home. And as I was driving, I took a left turn. Sorry, it's my first time calling. A little bit nervous. But
you're doing
great. I took a left turn. And I saw in a driveway, it was a really tall, sort of like, it was the Grim Reaper. It was sort of like a Grim Reaper, but he didn't have the scythe or the little, you know, curved knife with him. He was really tall. He was in those whole, you know, the black robe and everything. And I looked in his face, and it was sort of like pitch black. There was no face. It was really awkward. It was really weird. And he, instead of the big knife, wooden knife thing he has, he had a baby child, like an infant, in his arms, and it was really disturbing because it was looking right at me, and it was disfigured, and it was like, you know, had bruises on it. It was disgusting. It was really ugly, and this thing was really tall. It must have been at least 10 feet tall, and as I drove, you know, I just took, while I was taking the left turn, he was just, you know, it could have been like, I want to say like 20 feet away from me. Within that split second that I looked at him, he leaned forward, and it vomited, but it wasn't like normal vomit. It was sort of like cloud gassy oozing out. And then I didn't really stop. I don't know why I didn't stop, but I didn't want to stop, but I just kept driving. And I looked back in my rearview mirror, and it wasn't there. And it was very clear, like it was very detailed. I consider myself to be a healthy specimen. I mean, I rarely drink or smoke, and I wasn't tired at that time. So I'm just trying to figure out, I can understand the first incident I had when I was a child. It was there to help me out, but I can't understand why I saw this negative entity or spirit or ghost, whatever it is. So if you get a chance, I just want to let you know about that, and I'll take it off there. Thank you so much. Great show, by the way. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. And, you know, that'll lend itself to our next topic when we come back after the top of the hour. We'll begin talking about the demonic realm. But characters like this, there are reports of these hooded figures, these, you know, Grim Reaper-looking characters that are seen. What do you make of that, personally, from your experience and research?
Well, Dave, first off, I think that the first story was really beautiful, and that sounds fairly typical of the stories that I've heard about, you know, interventions for children. So I think that's wonderful. The second one is very typical of kind of an upper management level demon. You know, we mentioned the nine choirs of angels, and some fell from each choir, so there's basically nine ranks on the bad side also. I've seen that same type of figure once, and that is very typical. The holding the baby, I have heard of spirits that have appeared that way. I've not seen that myself, but that all sounds very typically demonic to me. Now, as to why the caller saw it, of course, I can't know for sure, but I can tell you that if it was allowed for him to see it, there was some reason for that. So maybe there was some choice or challenge going on in his life right before then, or that was coming up shortly thereafter. Maybe he had done something that had formed a little bit of a relationship with something or opened a door a little bit, and this was kind of a warning. You know, without talking with him in detail, which we can't do in this forum, it's hard to say, but I can say that all sounded typically demonic.
Let's try to squeeze in one more quick caller. First-time caller line, Ziza from Joshua Tree, California. You're on Coast to Coast AM with Adam Bly and Dave Schrader. What's your question?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hear me? Okay. I don't have a question. I guess I do, yes. In 1940 in Australia, where I was born, they believed in hospitals only in natural birth, and years later I read that the highest mortality rate for new mothers and babies was in Australia at that time. But my mother had been in labor for 2.5 days. My father was out of town, and she didn't see a doctor until the second day, and he told her that your baby has a lot of hair and your pelvis bones are locked, and that was the extent of it. And she was in her pain and in her exhaustion. She looked out the window by her bed, and outside she was a cherry tree in full bloom, and sitting in the branches of the tree were three beautiful Chinese children, and they turned and looked at her and smiled. And shortly after that, my father came to the hospital, and I don't know how he did it, but somehow they found a doctor that had the authority to deliver me by instruments. But I think those angels are mine. They've saved my life so many times, some simple things from accidents, from danger. change lanes, I'll hear in my head, and then something goes wrong, and then, or move, or all the things that have happened, and I think they're mine. So why would she see them as Chinese children, too? Beautiful, she says. Hello?
Yes.
Oh.
Yep. You know, with a lot of things, of course, I can't know for sure, but of course, there's many types of people in the world, and...
Well, let me say this. There wasn't a window by her bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, if this was a holy manifestation, it was probably to encourage her and comfort her that everything was going to be okay.
Well, that's what I assumed. They looked at her and smiled.
Exactly. And, you know, there's no reason that angels would appear as a particular race. I think, you know, they manifest in a human form for our benefit. Of course, they're not any race themselves. They're a pure spirit.
Mm-hmm. The children, you know, she said, beautiful. You know, they were dressed mm-hmm. in traditional wear. That's, I guess, how she knew they were Chinese.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Ziza.
You're welcome.
And the other thing, it could have been something in her mother's background, Dave. So maybe she had read a particular story or had, you know, a particular connection, and they may have chosen that form as a nod to her so that she would have some insight, you know, in addition.
A recognizable form, then.
Exactly. Something personal to her, perhaps. It's just an idea.
Adam Bly, our guest this evening, we spent the first 2 hours discussing angels, angel encounters, some of the belief systems, and Adam's own encounters. In the next hour, we're going to go a little darker. We're going to be speaking about the demonic realm. If you were to watch TV and the movies and books that are coming out, there seems to be an overwhelming uprise in dark forces on this planet. Is this truly the devil coming to power? Are possessions, oppressions, and the like becoming more prevalent? Is this something we need to focus on? Is this something we should be wary of? And how do we watch out for this and protect it? We're going to talk with our guest Adam Bly about that in the next hour. We're also going to take your calls in hour four. If you've ever had an encounter with what you believe to be a dark force, something that may be of a demonic realm, and you'd like some insights on that, Adam Bly will be here with us through hour four to chat about that. You can check out Adam's website at religiousdemonology.com. Real quickly, Adam, about a 50 seconds left here together. Your book, Possession, Exorcism, and Hauntings, what do you want people to get out of that book, and what should they look for if they want to buy that?
Well, that book is really, over the years, many times people have asked me to write down kind of the overall picture, you know, when I've given talks and other things. And so what that is kind of the whole picture of how the spiritual world works from my experience in the Catholic perspective, what types of manifestations, and then importantly, you know, what we can do, how we can pray for the dead appropriately, the things to avoid so we don't get into trouble, and then the steps that people can take if they do get into trouble.
Adam Bly, our guest. Stay tuned. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader, and you're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM.